On to our next topic this morning, which is asking, what is a trad wife? It's a term you may or may not be familiar with, but it is fair to say that it's having a moment. The term itself is a shortened version of traditional wife, and it is a social media phenomenon where influencers such as Nara Smith and Ballerina Farms are baking, procreating and homemaking their way to millions of followers. They often emphasise that this is their choice to essentially be a 1950s throwback, sometimes right down to the vintage outfits. Often too, there is a religious element to it. Many are Mormon or conservative Christians. Let's get more on this and hear from our guest, Caroline Burke, a journalist and editor at Katie Couric Media. Kia ora, good morning, Caroline. Thanks for being with us on Saturday morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
A trad wife, a vision of submissive domesticity. Is this kind of thing still appealing in 2024? I thought we were done with this.
Well, you know, I think that it's really important to make the distinction that you kind of hinted at, which is that there are trad wives, which are people who do this in real life, and then there are trad wife influencers. And these are people like Nara Smith and Ballerina Farm who monetize a performance. And so I think that these people can be very popular without necessarily converting anyone to any religion, because what they're really doing is selling an idea of perfection and domesticity. So what they end up doing is selling products, right? Household products. They all have Amazon links. And so people watch their videos. They feel good because it looks peaceful and like a really clean kitchen that wouldn't really happen in reality. And so then they buy things. And so that's really the outcome of this trend.
And so I suppose talk us through some of the big names, some of the people who are, I suppose, the stars of this area of social media.
Yeah. So as you can imagine, this term is very controversial. So people disagree very much over who is and who is not a trad wife influencer. At the heart of this is absolutely an account you mentioned, Ballerina Farm. The woman in that account, her name is Hannah Neilman, and her family, they live on some big sprawling farm in, you know, out west in America. And they have a really ideal lifestyle. You know, they drink milk straight from the barn. She bakes sourdough bread and her children are running all around. And what you get from that account, if you watch it, is this feeling of effortless perfection. You have a woman who is, by all accounts, you know, she's a mother, she has eight children, she's a business owner, and she just exists in this domestic utopia without ever losing her cool, without ever getting frustrated. And it's a very addictive form of content to consume, especially for, I think, women who feel very, very exhausted and burnt out by certain aspects of being alive right now. So women who don't have access to childcare, women who are having, you know, trouble maintaining their status at work and also being mothers, you look at these accounts and it's almost like a form of catharsis to watch them. And so they've become very popular over the last few years.
It's sort of a performative domesticity, would you say?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's the performance of domestic labor that is so appealing, because it's a version of domestic labor that can never exist outside of a screen. It can only exist in a highly curated 1 to 2 minute video where the kitchen is already clean, the food comes together so quickly, and you're watching this natural dinner get made. And so, yeah, it's a form of domestic labor that isn't actually real, but it's highly appealing.
Because it's not just about cooking and cleaning and maybe homeschooling. That seems to be quite a part of it, certainly some of the accounts that I looked at. It's about looking incredibly glamorous while you do it in, you know, your full face of naked makeup and coiffed hair, and you're videoing and editing it all. And so it's not even just about what you're doing. It's about what you're looking like while you do it as well.
Exactly.
It looks like it takes a lot of time.
An unimaginable amount of time. And I think that that's an important thing to note, that these accounts with millions of followers absolutely have employees working for them. No one is doing this on their own. And so when you think about the 1950s homemaker, the advertisements we saw of the woman in a perfect apron getting her pot roast ready for her husband at night, this is just the newest version of that. This is exactly that. And it's been repackaged for the social media world. And the only really difference that we have now is that the way that people engage with influencers now means that you feel like you know them. So you're not just looking at a magazine, at a cartoon of a beautiful woman. You are inside her home, you are with her. You feel like not only that you know her, but you're in a sense inside of her thoughts. And so that is a really effective way to sell people things because they feel so emotionally connected to you that they don't even realize that you are there to sell them products.
How much money do these influencers make?
I think that that is the million-dollar question, pun not intended. I think that there is a lot of speculation over that. I think that people can make their own estimations. You know, there are certain calculations you can make based off of how many views that the influencer gets online, that they might make a certain amount through these social media platforms. But the estimate is well into the millions, is what I'll say. And what happens is these influencers eventually build brands out of it. So Ballerina Farm is a great example. She's making a certain amount of money simply because of how many views she gets on her social media accounts. And then you also have the store online where there's, you know, $100 sourdough starter kit. There are aprons. There are chore tote bags. There are meat packages you can get. You can get some meat from their farm shipped to your house. So it is endless, all of the ways in which they can profit off of your connection to the account.
So if these women are essentially making money from this, is it feminist or is it anti-feminist?
It's a great question. I think that there are many levels of irony to what is taking place with these accounts. And I think that the question of whether it's feminist or not gets into what type of feminism you want to believe in. If you believe that feminism is about a woman doing what's best for her, and getting as much money as she can, and maybe she can make more money being an influencer than she could at some, you know, terrible 9-to-5 job, then you might think this is feminist. If you think that feminism is about collective liberation of women, then no, this is not feminist because you are reinforcing a nostalgic idea for a time period that never really existed to begin with. It only existed within the pages of advertisements. And you're also robbing women of their capital in the process, right? You are encouraging people to spend more money on kitchen products through you than they would at their local store. And you're doing it in such a manner that they might not even realize what has fully happened until the product arrives at their door days later. So I personally don't find it to be feminist, but there are many people who believe that it is.
So what is the effect of something like this? If people enjoy watching this kind of stuff on social media and that's as far as it goes, is that fair enough that you can view it as entertainment essentially?
I think it is. You know, the thing that I try to tell people is that my goal is for people to recognize that these are advertisements and that these accounts are set up and designed and curated for you to become addicted to them. And if you're aware of that, then it's no different than turning on the television and watching the commercials that have been curated for you to buy something as well. So I don't think that there's necessarily something that is inherently malevolent with these accounts. I think that it is just another form of consumerism. People are, it's just another way to convince people to buy something. And if you can consent to that, then you can absolutely enjoy it. I have plenty of accounts that I follow. I have influencers who I buy things from and I enjoy their products. So I think it's like anything else, any other marketplace, any other store. If you can be aware that you are at a store and that you are perusing products, then I think that you can enjoy everything else that comes with it.
However, it is not always as benign as it might seem on the surface. There are connections to the alt-right, the far right, to red pilling, which might be a term people are familiar with, to some of these accounts. And it's like a sort of a fantasy almost for the far right, some of this stuff, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think I know that in the United States, there's a big concern that these accounts are connected to, or at the very least, invigorating a base of people who absolutely want to restrict rights for women in the real world outside of social media. So, absolutely. I mean, I would say that they're at the best and at the worst, tradwife influencers are reflections of what is taking place outside. And so you have people who watch these accounts and who love the depictions and think that this is where women should exist. They should exist to prioritize their husbands and their children and their households and to not have any needs of their own. And then, ironically, there are people who are so frustrated by this that they watch it out of anger and they become addicted to these accounts because of how angry and frustrated they are. And that is what makes this such a successful social media trend. You have such a discourse taking place. And in order for something to really succeed online, you have to have both sides. You have to have people who love what it represents, and you have to have people who despise what it represents. And that's what drives engagement. So I think that that's why we're seeing such a big conversation around this topic right now.
Because it is controversial, or it can be controversial. It can provoke those strong opinions. And it can also create content that can be conspiracy theory or cult adjacent. It can give that a platform that it may not otherwise have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really difficult that a lot of alt-right ideologies are just so embedded within the concept of a quote-unquote traditional womanhood. And I would also say that at a time when gender fluidity and the construct of gender is really being challenged in a really mainstream way for maybe the first time, it's not accidental that we are seeing a resurgence of people encouraging the opposite belief, which is that there is no gender fluidity. There is no idea of a social construction of gender. This is who women are. This is how they exist. And so you see these battling ideologies taking place all over social media.
What has been the effect over the last year or so, I guess? What kind of effect has there been on the tradwife influencer world since Roe v. Wade and that decision at the Supreme Court in the United States?
So what's really interesting is that tradwife influencers have really exploded in popularity simultaneously to this overturning of Roe v. Wade. And I don't think that it's a cause and effect, but I think that it is hugely correlative. I think that, one of these accounts, Ballerina Farm, was shared as a highlight for Fox News, a conservative news network, right after Roe v. Wade was overturned, as look at this woman who, at the time, I think maybe she had six kids. Look at this woman who has these children. Look at her celebrating, traditional values. And even though this woman had never outwardly, affirmed herself as someone who had those ideologies, her image and her likeness online was used to amplify that belief of how women should behave. And what happened was her follower count, quadrupled. She went from something like 1.5 million followers, which is a reasonable amount, but pretty standard for influencers, to 8 million followers in a matter of months. And so you see this conversation taking place between religious organizations and political conservative organizations and these online trends. And the forever question that you can never really get, pinned down is to what extent they all work together. Is it just a constant dance between the culture and the politics, or is one fueling another? It's really hard to say.
What is its intersection with religion?
So, at the base of not just the tradwife influencer world, but most mommy influencers, mommy bloggers that we've seen, online for as long as the internet has existed, is fundamentalist Christian rhetoric. In particular, Mormon rhetoric. A vast majority of these successful bloggers and influencers have Mormon roots. And that's because, to be a good influencer, a lot of these women are primed for it. They grow up in communities that teach them to basically, serve their household, the idea of being a perfect woman, and to kind of quiet their own identity in the name of being a perfect wife. People who are familiar with Mormonism will know of the Proverbs 31 woman, which is basically like a type of passage that young children are taught about who the ideal woman is. And the ideal woman is someone who takes care of the home, defends her home, takes care of her husband, has food on the table. And so young women in these communities are taught that from a very young age. And they're also encouraged to idealize perfection. They always have their hair done when they leave the house. They always wear makeup. And so as they become women, One of the only jobs that they can have is one that exists within the home. And so what happens is that they are perfectly primed to be these really successful influencers. They're disciplined. They have been taught from birth to espouse this ideology of being a certain type of woman. And they can ironically become, major breadwinners for their families without ever necessarily forgoing the requirements of being a perfect woman, which is still being a wife, still prioritizing your children, and still valuing the family above all else. So that's why we tend to see Mormon women at the forefront of every new iteration of the momfluencer.
How far does the influence go? Is there a sort of a trickle down here, some kind of enabling of extremism? And is there any way to really quantify this?
I don't think that there is. I think a lot of concern that I have seen is that people are worried that this will lead to some level of religious conversion, of women not necessarily knowing what they're getting into, who are converting to an extreme version of Mormonism or of evangelicalism. I think that the outcome is more so that it encourages women to take positions in households where they are fully reliant on men for their well-being. And it also encourages men to normalize that as well. And so what we have seen in the last several months is countless women coming out and saying, I was a trad wife, or I was a stay-at-home mom who had no access to finances, and now I am divorced and I am broke. And so when you want to think about the functional outcome of this, I think the functional outcome of this trend is, number one, women are losing their hard-earned money to these accounts without really consenting to being sold something. And number two, women might normalize even further the idea of submitting to their husbands in a way that makes them really, really financially at risk down the line.
It's a fascinating territory. Carol Burke, thank you very much for joining us on Saturday morning, journalist and editor at Katie Couric Media there. If